This segment is brought to you by Matt Bates from Movement Mortgage, NMLS number 844154. Movement Mortgage supports equal housing opportunity, NMLS number 39179, NMLSconsumeraccess.org.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Emilio Despirito, and this is your show all about real estate here, primarily in the Rhode Island and surrounding Massachusetts and Connecticut marketplaces. But we bring on guests from all over the world to talk about real estate in various markets and their various professions, because you know what? It's a global economy here, right? It's every last thing affects every other last thing, as we've seen in the past 20 or so years, right? Especially real estate. So we've got a really awesome guest coming on from Canada later. Stay tuned for more of that. Right now, we've got Matt Bates of Movement Mortgage. He's here with us today to talk about a big subject. I got to tell you, I'm running into this all the time. We've asked Matt to come in and talk about solar panels and how they factor into lending when you're looking to get a mortgage. But Matt Bates, Movement Mortgage, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. And yes, solar panels are something that is becoming more and more as people get them and get them installed. You drive down the road, you see them more and more frequently on roofs of people's homes. Sure. So it's becoming a regular conversation with clients and trying to figure out how it works. And the crazy thing about this solar industry and this trend that's going on, I guess, as you can call it, is that I seem to find that not every solar system and the money that it costs to get the solar on the house is the same. You know, people have different size solar systems. People, you can lease them. You can let the utility company put it on and basically use the solar, but it's owned by the utility company. You can buy it, purchase the solar systems, and then finance them and own them after you get done financing them. There's all these different situations going on, and it impacts people on how they purchase these homes in different ways. So I know that I'm constantly learning about it myself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in the past, with the situations that I've helped with folks purchasing new homes, mm-hmm. it generally comes into trying to make sure that you still qualify for the loan with the solar panel payment included in mm-hmm. your overall debt to income ratio. Mm-hmm. Why that's important is because it's included in your buying power. So if, let's say the payment is $300 a month for the solar panels, mm-hmm. you essentially have to be pre-approved for a house that would cost that for $300 more worth of financing without the solar panels. Correct. So somebody that's qualified to buy a $400,000 house with solar panels technically is pre-approved for the high 400s, because that is the $300 that, you know, so instead of qualifying for 500, you're now qualifying for less because of the solar panel payment.
So question for you, Matt, right? So, all right. So if the solar panel cost is $300 a month, right? But the electric bill would be, say, you know, $300 a month, $325 a month or whatever it is. When the bank is going to lend on a house, do the banks take in consideration for debt to income ratio utility bills or no?
No. Okay. Utility bills are not factored into the debt to income ratio. The what is the payment associated with it. It's like, I'll put it this way. It's like an automotive payment. So you have a payment for a car that you financed, but we don't look at the gas that it takes to power the car. We don't factor in what your gas bill is every month that you're driving to work or wherever you're going, but mm-hmm. we are going to factor in what the payment is to purchase the car that you put the gas in. So utility cost, electricity or gas or oil or heat or whatever the utility is, that's the gas. But the financing part is the cost that it takes to you, whoever signed up to to get these solar panels installed is that's the payment that is, and the payments can vary depending on what the agreement is with the current homeowner. And another factor of this is that the solar panel companies are often telling customers that it's not a lien against the house, but it gets recorded as a lien against the house. And most recently, that was really frustrating for the client, and it was a tough position for me to be in because it was really hard to come up with a solution. Is that they tried to they needed a line of credit, a HELOC against their house. And because the second lien for the solar panels was against the title of the home, the HELOC bank would not issue a HELOC because they will not take third lien, and the solar panel wouldn't move from second to third. So what I'm finding is that the solar industry is not up to speed as much as what us other lenders out there for mortgages are operating at. Like they're not on our level with being able to coexist with to the benefit of the customer.
Correct.
So it's like you have these folks that really need this HELOC to fix an important part of their home, and they can't get approved for it because the solar panel company won't move the title position, the lien position, and the mortgage company needs to be in second lien in order to sign off on a line of credit.
So let me get this straight, Matt, right? And if you're just tuning in, we've got Matt Bates of Movement Mortgage on the line with us. Movement can lend in, I believe, all 50 states. You guys are all over. Matt is licensed in Connecticut, Florida, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island. He's one of the top loan originators in the marketplace, and you're hearing it from him, okay? It's he's when you're going to get financing on a home, and there's solar panels on that home, that works against your debt to income ratio and actually lowers the amount of home you can purchase, lowers the purchase price that you can actually obtain because of that. So Matt, with that said, and I want to make another point in a second. With that said, does solar help buyers if it's
It's
a
an
lien?
opinionated thing that it makes it harder. It does.
Yes. All right. So it makes it harder to purchase, which means it makes it harder to sell. Okay. And I got to tell you too, I've spoke with three different appraisers on solar, Matt. And guess what? I said, does solar increase your value? Because a lot of these solar reps are telling, they're telling their clients, solar is going to increase your home value. Let me tell you, as a realtor with 1,200 plus sales under my belt here in the Ocean State, zero times did I see it increase value. Okay. I see buyers run the other way. They're not able to get approved. Okay. That's one, what Matt just said. In some cases, in other cases, they're spending more money than they wanted to. It's a break even, if not a loss, against the current utility bills. And I understand utility bills go up over time. And Matt, the other thing the three appraisers said is, listen, if the roof needs to be replaced, it's going to cost the buyer more. They got to rip the solar down, put the new roof on, do that. And I see solar companies go right over old roofs.
And I it's quick I'd like to add two more points as
Yeah,
soon as you finish.
one, just one, hold on one second. The one, two appraisers said negative 5,000 on appraisal report if the system's even paid off, bro. And then one of them said if the system's paid off and it's in great working condition, he sees another 20, 15 years, he'll add 5,000. Think about that. What does it cost these systems? 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 grand on normal homes? Go ahead, Matt.
So one thing to consider when you want to purchase a home with a solar system on it, you have to go through two applications, one for the mortgage to purchase the home and the application to take over the financing terms for the seller that's currently has those in place. So you're applying for a loan that you didn't initially negotiate for. You're bound to these terms that were sold to somebody else, and you have to take over for that. So that's number one. It's double the application process, and it's double the underwrite with this, but you're dealing with a solar company for the second one. And then the second important part that I wanted to add is that a lot of these homeowners that are selling their houses with solar panel systems, if they were purchased, you get a rebate, and depending on the cost of the original system, the last scenario that I'm referring that this has happened, the seller got a $9,000 rebate, And if the rebate gets applied to the balance of the loan that's for the solar panels, then the payment gets reduced by, let's say, $125 or $150. And you get a much more attractive payment. But if you take the $9,000 rebate or X amount of dollars rebate, because it's not always $9,000, but if you take the rebate and you spend it on other debt or somewhere else in your life, then that payment gets fixed at the higher rate. Yeah. And if you're the buyer taking over the financing for the solar panels, you're paying the majority of the loan back without getting the benefit of the rebate. So the rebate should be negotiated in with the purchase of the home for a per diem amount of, okay, if you get $9,000 and there's 30 years of financing on these solar panels, then you should get a portion of the rebate. And I see the rebate never getting compensated for the buyer who's now in charge of this loan. So there's a lot there, and be cautious, make sure you do your homework before you do it. Yeah. And it's not, be ready for a ride.
It's not one size fits all with everything. Okay. So I'm not trying to blanket the solar industry. Okay. Cause I think it has its place. Okay. With specific applications, but I got to tell you again, I have not seen a winner with solar. Actually, I've seen one, rural land in Foster. It worked for him. He got it when there was a massive tax incentive. I think he paid $15,000 for the system. He did it in a way it's paid off now. It was a mount on his land. That's the only one I've ever seen successful. And maybe, you know, you've had a better success story. Maybe you can speak with Matt or me about it. Contact Matt, go to therimortgageguy.com, weigh in. And if you're a solar company, you know, that's okay. If you're a solar rep, don't blow us up. We do know some other solar reps we can contact. Therimortgageguy.com. Check them out, therimortgageguy.com. Awesome. Great stuff, Matt. Thanks for tuning in. Great segment. Appreciate
you
being
here.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Hey, stay tuned. We're going to be right back here on the Despirito Team Real Estate Show. We've got Melissa Delena of Delena Law. This segment has been powered by Matt Bates of Movement Mortgage. Good morning. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Emilio Despirito, and this is your show all about real estate. We have a great time on here. We talk with some fantastic guests, professionals that are in the industry and several different components of the industry. And today we've got Melissa Delena of Delena Law. Melissa has been practicing real estate for over two decades. She's, you know, one of the go-to attorneys here, specifically handling real estate in Rhode Island, covering Rhode Island, Mass, and Connecticut too. And man, I got to tell you that the top real estate agents and advisors in the industry go to Melissa because she knows her stuff. Melissa, thanks for coming on with us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me again. Always a pleasure to be here. And thanks to everyone for listening.
You're welcome. So Melissa, you know, when you're selling a condo, okay, there are a lot of things, or buying a condo, there's a lot of different issues that could come up. So we wanted to have you come on the show today because a lot of people may not be familiar. It might be their first time buying, their first time selling, or their first time in a transaction with a condo.
Right. I think that you just hit the nail on the head, Emilio. You know, even if you've bought and sold three other properties, if you've never bought and sold a condo, this is going to be a whole new language that really you have to understand. And I think disclosure is the perfect place to start, because if you are selling a condominium, you as the seller, with the help, hopefully, of your listing agent, are going to have an obligation to share a whole bunch of information. This is an eyes wide open. You're not leaving the association under the cover of darkness and hoping nobody knows what a poorly run management, you know, association you're leaving. That is going to be, unfortunately, painfully obvious to any prospective buyer. And certainly, on the other hand, any prospective buyer and the help of a good buyer's agent and buyer's attorney should be thinking about asking the questions that often are going to face condominium transactions. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost are looking at the documents that govern the condominium association. Really, I mean, there's a whole bunch of different documents. You'll see bylaws, you'll see rules and regulations, you're going to see declarations. That's what really creates the association and talks about how it's going to be managed. They're all important. But at the end of the day, if you're doing nothing as a prospective buyer except looking at the bylaws, for me, that's kind of going to take you through your day-to-day operation. And sometimes the associations might call them rules and regulations. Sometimes I might have both. It really depends on how big and sophisticated the association is, right? Because even at that, there's so many nuances. If you're in a three family in Providence that was created as condominiums back, you know, at 10 years ago, that is going to look and feel much different, usually much more casual than if you're going to be in a, you know, big complex with 100 plus units.
True. Yeah. The financing's different. Everything's different.
Everything is impacted, right? So I think first and foremost, though, Emilio, is for buyers to be looking at those documents with the review of an attorney and understand what it is that they are going to have to live with, because there are no giving it back. You can't change your mind. And as a seller, you have to make these documents readily available and as soon as possible, because if the buyer reviews those documents and there's something in there that they cannot live with, well, that is generally, unless waived, a contingency that the buyer can walk away from the transaction, get their deposit back, and move on. So as a seller, you don't want to drag your heels in the hopes that they're not going to find out about something that's coming up, because the longer you drag your heels, the longer into the transaction it's going to go, when that's when the buyer can walk away.
That's right. You know what I like to do? I like to put the condo docs right in MLS as an attachment. So anybody even looking to make an offer can go ahead and place that, because here in Rhode Island on the purchase and sales agreement, it says what? It says that they get a copy of the condo docs when the purchase and sales agreement is fully executed. So Melissa, there's a time frame that you were talking about in regards to the you know, when somebody has time to look at the condo docs and when somebody has time for the resale certificate. All of that can be negotiable, right? It's not, it doesn't have to be what is in the standard, I don't want to say standard, but in the Rhode Island purchase and sales, correct?
Right. The Rhode Island purchase and sales will have suggested timelines for the buyer's review, but it certainly can be something that the parties agree to negotiate. That's absolutely an option.
Yeah, my suggestion to anybody looking to sell a condo is to make sure that, you know, that your agent, and if an agent should be doing this, negotiate down that time frame. So let's just say if there's a contingency that says 5 days, let's try to negotiate it down to two.
You know? Well, and the other thing too, which you had already referenced as a good point, is making sure that your agent has those documents available so right. That you're not waiting for the delivery of those documents after the contract's been executed. It happens simultaneous. So if you have a concurrent contingency such as inspections, well, then that's all happening at the same time. So they're not going to have extra time after the inspection period lapses because you forgot to get them the condo docs. That's why the expectation of being prepared is so, so important for sellers.
Absolutely. Now, Melissa, there's a clause in the purchase and sales, which I was fascinated with. You recently taught a class to our advisors. And basically, there's a provision in there that states that the buyer can walk away all the way up to the closing, I believe, or somewhere around there. Can you talk about that and about
We're talking about here, Emilio, such a great point for you to bring up is the resale certificate. So just like the seller has an obligation to deliver condo docs at the beginning of the transaction, the seller has an obligation to deliver a resale certificate, which is basically a clean bill of health. Just to talk about the resale certificate for a minute, this is a place where the association is identifying what, if anything, is owed by the particular unit owner, if there's any outstanding assessments. Assessments are a really important place for prospective buyers to be aware of where there could be added expense. It will also discuss the financial budget, proof of insurance, if there's any leases or, you know, violations that have incurred to the unit. And most important, it will be a release of the right of first refusal. If the association has the right of first refusal, this is where the release is recited. So the resale certificate is a kind of a no closing without the resale certificate, because you absolutely need that document to be procured. So once the resale certificate is purchased and procured from the management company at the cost of the seller, it's delivered to the buyer. And the buyer has a review period to ensure that there's nothing in the resale certificate that is new information, essentially, that they can't live with about the association. Mm-hmm. And if they are unhappy with the terms of the resale certificate, they basically can walk away for no reason, say, sorry, we're out. And in that case, turn the deposit, expect the deposit to be returned back to them.
That's something that you do not want to happen if you are selling, especially if you're purchasing a property on the other end. So if you are in a situation where you're selling a condo, please do yourself a favor. And if you need the money from your condo proceeds to purchase your next house, put subject to a successful sale of, and then boom, in the additional provisions, always seek an attorney for legal, you know, guidance, I have to say. But Melissa, I mean, don't you agree? You got to protect.
Absolutely. It's so important that, you know, in the case you're talking about where a seller could lose their condo sale up until the week of the closing, if they hold off on getting a resale certificate and that late, they need to make sure they're protecting themselves under the purchase and sales for their future or simultaneous purchase. Because if not, then they are going to be expected to perform despite the fact that they don't have a closing that's happening. So it is so important with how many nuances and pieces are moving in these complicated transactions where people are making double closings. You really, really do need the help of, I think, a single attorney, because it kind of streamlines the transaction. We can quarterback both sides because now we're aware of all the issues.
Correct. Yeah. But needless to say, you need somebody that's experienced in those kinds of transactions because, you know, they can be a lot and there's so many moving pieces. I love when people say, like, why do I need a real estate attorney? I'm going to do it on my own. Why do I need a realtor? Like, I'm going to do it on my own. Good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, there's a lot that people don't realize, because I think we all as seasoned professionals make it look so easy. That's just the truth of it, is on the day to day, you don't know all of the things that are happening behind the scenes. And that's the difference.
That's right. Absolutely. Good stuff. And if you have any questions at all for Melissa Delano of Delano Law, you can talk with her. You can give her a shout at 401-885-3800 for all of your real estate questions. If you're a real estate agent and you're looking to really up your game and learn more, she holds a lot of CE credit credits for you. We've got some up and coming. Reach out to Melissa to find out. She works through various brokerages and associations to put these on. It's fantastic. Just when you think you know everything, there's so much more to learn. 401-885-3800. Go ahead and contact Melissa today. Melissa, thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a great week.
You're very welcome. Thank you, too. Nice job, Melissa. Great segment. Good stuff. We'll be right back here in a couple minutes on the Despirito Team Real Estate Show. This segment has been powered by Delano Law. Good morning. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Emilio Despirito, your host for the remainder of this hour, and we're talking about real estate. Now, one of the most fascinating things about real estate is how many different lives you get to impact when you're in a transaction, whether you're a buyer, you're a seller, a real estate advisor. Doesn't matter. There's so many people being affected by this. And one of the things that I've noticed, which has been fascinating over the past few years, being connected and being a part of the Engel & Volkers global network, is how many people actually move in and out of Rhode Island and throughout the world. So we get to tap into this global network of talent here, which is unlike any other. And we get to have on top producing real estate advisors from all over the globe. Okay. Just to let you know, 33 countries, 5 continents, 17,000 advisors. It's a special company with a very large reach. So today I wanted to ask my friend and colleague, Richard Deacon of Okanagan. Did I say that correct?
Yeah, pretty close.
Okay. You know, Okanagan out in British Columbia in Canada, to come on and talk about his network. I wanted him to talk about himself a little bit, talk about the market over there in Canada, what's happening, how ultra high net worth individuals are purchasing properties, and what it's like dealing with them out in that part of the world. Richard, without further ado, thanks for joining us today.
Emilio, thanks so much for having me on the show. Absolute pleasure to be here. And you got it correct. Okanagan is how it's pronounced.
Okanagan. You know, I had it correct. I did it 4 times before the show started.
And you know what's funny? Fun fact is actually this valley extends across the U.S. border, believe it or not, into Washington State. Yeah. And it's called Okanagan down there. So it's spelled with an O. And up here, we spell it with an A. It dates back to, you know, interesting sort of native and First Peoples times. But so there's probably not an incorrect way to pronounce it, especially after too much wine from our Okanagan Valley.
That's fantastic. Appreciate that. Now, Richard speaks French and English fluently, and obviously being up in Canada, you better speak French and English, right? But Richard's also part, I got to say this, Richard, you're part of the private office, you're a private office advisor, okay? Can you briefly tell our listeners what that means?
Yeah, you know, it's a special network and designation with Engel & Völkers, within Engel & Völkers. What it's not is it's not sort of a beauty contest or a race to the top based just on sales performance. Now, nothing wrong with that. You know, sales awards are great. They exist within the real estate industry and have forever. Great way of recognizing people. It's a little different than that. So at the end of the day, it is based on the way, here's the way that I liken it to that trusted lawyer that everyone's got. Hopefully you don't need to call every day, but when you do, they're there. You know, that accountant, that tax specialist, that advisory that so many people, not just the wealthy, have in their Rolodex. And a private office advisor is just that. We are only a few hundred out of that 17,000 that you quoted around the world. But essentially, you can think of in almost every trusted market, sorry, in almost every market that Engel & Völkers exists, there is a private office advisor. There's not 10, there might be one or two. In some markets that are larger, there may be a handful. But it isn't the sort of typical realtor. And I don't mean that with any disrespect or any ego in it. This is just colleagues like yourself and myself that do a business at a certain level, deal with clients from all over the world, and tend to deal with sophisticated transactions. You know, we often delve into details that involve bringing in accountants and lawyers and specialists to really help these business people and these entrepreneurs as they navigate through often very complex real estate transactions. And the other thing I'll say, you mentioned it, the network. I mean, networking is an interesting term. It can be seen as sort of that, you know, that slimy handshake at a rubber chicken dinner or a conference. Sure. Yeah. I mean, you can hand out 20 business cards over luncheon and think that you effectively networked. This is a little bit different. So this is it, you know, me calling Emilio because I have a client that's interested in Rhode Island or has a question about your part of the world. And perhaps well before the real estate transaction wants to know about the best schools, the best restaurants, perhaps entrepreneurial investment opportunities, right? Connecting into things that go well beyond real estate. So think of that as the role of a private office advisor in some of the best places in the world. I mean, I live in a secondary market, but I mean, we can call up private office advisors in, I mean, name the city on the map, you can throw a dart at it, you know, Dubai and anywhere in Italy, in Paris. I mean, just incredible.
London. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's well said. And you know, we're connecting people in different types of contexts, not only real estate. There can be times, right, where we're working together with clients and we're saying, hey, you know what, my friend Richard, I know he worked with a client in this type of situation. Let me go ahead and call him and pick his brain, right? How can he do this? Or we can tap into E&V yachting and find out how maybe somebody could write off a yacht against their business, or so many different things that we get to tap into and do as a network, which I haven't seen anywhere else. But discretion is also key in working with folks. I'm going to talk about the ultra high net worth buyers and sellers for a couple minutes, because it's something that I think you do very well and that we do very well in private office. And I know you pay keen attention to detail. Okay, you're known for this in our network, Richard, right? Can you kind of talk about maybe a situation where it took your keen attention, maybe a situation where you're able to get a client what they wanted? It was a specific type of situation, a vineyard, a ranch, anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think number one, not just the ultra wealthy or ultra high net worth individuals. Many people, you know, have a real affinity or have an expectation of detail. So if you talk about anybody that's been successful in business, from, you know, a guy running a small food cart, let's say on the streets in New York City, to somebody that's a billionaire that has, you know, many, many companies and holdings, you know, in their portfolio, for the most part, people that have been successful have a fine attention to detail, right? I mean, I'm often a combination of being OCD and ADHD and a few other acronyms. And I don't think it's always a bad thing. I mean, for me, I think about, from my perspective, how would I want that problem or situation to be solved? And how would I want to be served? So for me, I know I love it when I roll into a particular restaurant or business, retail store, or a hotel, and they take care of you. I mean, we all know that. I just finished reading a fascinating book called Unreasonable Hospitality.
Oh, it's a great book.
Yeah. And, you know, just thinking about those little things that those guys did. I mean, they empowered staff at their restaurant to, you know, to essentially solve problems, whether it was a $5 problem that could be solved by going up, plugging a meter on the streets in New York City because the patrons, you know, the parking was running out, to delivering the sort of the wow and the incredible, you know, big gifts or things that would impress. So I think at the end of the day, it's about expectation. And it is about genuinely solving problems and being prepared. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, if you don't know an answer or if you can't solve a problem immediately on the spot, that's okay. But committing and committing to getting back to the individual and then following through again, whether you're bringing in a professional that's in your network or your advisory group, you know, or solving the problem yourself. And it might not always be real estate. What happens in our market quite often, this happened to me yesterday. I had some clients that were here from Luxembourg and they'd gone home. And one of the things that they had, we had, you know, not done on our tour for the few days that they were here was around schools. And so I just delved in after they had left to sort of a next level of schools. And, mm-hmm. you know, those are the kinds of pieces that maybe don't seem obvious when it relates to real estate, but are, I think, really separate the difference between somebody that is just dealing with sort of regular transactions and maybe they know market comparables and they know all the things that most good realtors know. But the question is, how much do they know about that extra layer of lifestyle and living and community? So I would say definitely there is a, maybe not an expectation, but certainly I do expect that any client that is coming into my market that certainly is in that high net worth or ultra high net worth segment is going to get that that level of service. So it's very typical for me to go above and beyond, I suppose, what you would think would be the norm as it relates to, you know, mm-hmm. to real estate and dealing with these types of clients.
Absolutely, man. It takes a passion too. It really does. And that's part of what I love about, you know, about this network too, right? Exclusivity, passion, and competence. And those are all of the three things that you're going to find, especially working with a private office advisor. Let's talk about trends. Okay. I want to talk about trends and behaviors of the ultra high net worth individuals. What do you see in store for the wealthy in 2024?
Yeah, a couple of themes. I mean, first of all, as many of you know, and I'm sure you know, and of course, you know, in our network, we do deal with an awful lot of incredible folks that are very successful around the planet. I mean, these are a rare breed, right? Mm-hmm. And I say that with all respect. It's a majority of who I deal with. And I think, you know, the ultra high net worth especially, and one can define what that means. I mean, in different markets, it's worth different things. You know, essential ultra high net worth could be 30, 50, 100 million net worth plus. So we're already dealing with somebody that is breathing, you know, rarefied air, so to speak. They typically are global in nature. They might not always be the most sophisticated person in the room. And in fact, in my dealings, and I was the co-founder of Tiger 21, which is a fascinating organization in Canada that deals with the ultra high net worth and the wealthy, mm-hmm. an American organization. You know, what we would often see would be that the wealthiest guy in the room wasn't wearing the shiniest watch and the fanciest suit. He might be, sure. he or she might be somebody that was wearing a very simple set of khakis and some scuffed up sneakers and had built an absolute empire in a particular vertical. But at the end of the day, typically ultra high net worth people also own a lot of real estate. It's a segment that they invest in along with private equity that they're very confident in. They mm-hmm. typically invest in global markets and often emerging markets. So, you know, one of the things I would say that's in store is cash is always king. It's another thing that I learned in my time with Tiger 21 is that ultra high net worth people often always sit on cash so they can jump on opportunities. And by cash, I don't necessarily mean literally a suitcase of cash, but different than our typical buyer that is, you know, financing through maybe a traditional mortgage or lending product. So number one is cash is king, obviously to jump in at times when the market may be a little softer. Now, you know, in our market here, and I would say this because I was just at a conference in Whistler last week with about 150 Engle Volkers Canadian colleagues, mm-hmm. Some private office and our network. And very typically across Canada right now, we're starting to see potentially, I always hesitate to say bottom because I'm not a predictor with any real knowledge, certainly not an economist. But, you know, I think we've definitely started to see prices soften to the point where now people are starting to say, you know, are we going to see some rise and some lift in 2024? We've recently had a number of our central bank rate holds. So we haven't had any increases now in a number of months, which is the first time in a long time. They're now predicting that either the next or just after that bank announcement will probably be a slight decrease in rates. I see maybe not floodgates, but certainly I see the market really opening up when that happens. And generally, the sophisticated wealthy are always ahead of the pack. I mean, how did they get wealthy? Generally, because they took a risk and they were smart on something from a timing perspective, and or they really researched and saw what was coming down down the road. So I do see transactions happening now where the ultra wealthy are, for two reasons. I mean, there's always the lifestyle purchasers, especially in a valley like mine. So just to give you a bit of context, the city that I'm in is called Kelowna. It's a small city, even from Canadian standards. It's a small to mid-sized city, about 150,000 people. The valley that we're in is 300,000 roughly, and we are the fastest growing city in Canada. You know, quite amazing the number of cranes and towers that are built. There's never before been this type of boom in our city. And we're a lifestyle-based city. We don't have a huge workforce or a head office base. We had been primarily a retirement and vacation destination. We have the highest concentration of wineries and vineyards outside of California in North America, which is incredible.
Beautiful, yeah.
So people want to move here. And it is also a very expensive market. You know, our average price point is $1 million. So, you know, you're not getting much these days for even $2 million, let's say. It was just looking before we came on the show this morning. So people are moving to my market and to markets like mine for lifestyle reasons. So who's doing that? It's not your typical 9-to-5 job seekers. Yeah. It is more of the high net worth and ultra high net worth. So what I'm
where are they coming from, Richard?
Yeah, Jay. Fascinating. I mean, one of the restrictions we have in Canada right now, which not a lot of Americans know, is we actually have a foreign buyers ban.
That's right.
Unbelievable. They just announced, I think yesterday, they were extending it for 2 more years. I understand it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but we won't get into politics today. We have a housing crisis and a housing shortage in Canada for lots of different reasons. And this was one tool that the federal government, so this is a federal government rule.
Yeah.
That's right. A whole nother episode on the layers of government we have in Canada. Incredible country, but lots of complexity when it comes to jurisdictions here. So we do have a foreign buyers ban. There are a couple of ways creatively around it. But for the most part, if you're coming from the States, and we often get, you know, an awful lot of inquiries, especially because of the Engel & Volkers name and, you know, the amount of collaboration that I do like this in the United States. And it's tough. We have to say no. So the story of who's moved here has been a story of migration. Some of the feeder markets, Vancouver, which has always been a very strong market for us. It's a 45-minute flight or a 3.5-hour drive through the mountains down to the coast. So Vancouver, you know, incredible city on the Pacific Rim. I suppose it would be the Seattle of Canada. Huge Asian and South Asian and Indian population. You know, staggering as far as the multiculturalism in that city. Beautiful city, but for the last 20 years has become a world-class city. And, you know, price points in Vancouver are essentially double what they are in the Okanagan. So we've always seen a lot of migration. You can navigate and work down in Vancouver, but live up here, you know, either flying or driving back and forth. That's quite common. Second biggest driving market for us is Calgary. So Calgary, the sort of the Houston of Canada, biggest concentration of energy company head offices, largest head office center in the West outside of Toronto. And Calgary's always had been connected to oil and gas. The market in Kelowna and the Okanagan Valley has been connected to the rise and fall in energy. Oil's been up for a number of years. Calgary's been booming. And then Toronto and Montreal would be the other two large centers. So Toronto being our sort of New York City, largest city in the country, and our financial center. And then Montreal, from a standpoint of just always been a strong connection to the Okanagan, people wanting to come out west.
Wow, that's fascinating. I did hear about that international buyer's ban. I think that was last year in 2023 when that happened. And I agree with you. I mean, it's kind of a tough pill to swallow because we obviously want to make sure that people have access to real estate, and real estate should be a free market. And it's kind of when you shut that down, again, not to get political, but I don't necessarily agree with that either. Inventory.
Yeah, and this would be controversial somewhat saying this. I understand it from a standpoint of, and I say this with all respect, regular housing. So, you know, your typical condos and single family homes. But I live in a market where there are $5 to $20 million lakefront homes and $5 to $50 million vineyard properties. And, you know, those are not typically the properties that are, call it, bunging up or clogging up the system, which this law or these rules are meant to try to help out, you know, sort of make housing affordable. So right now, you know, if this just happened to me last week, buyer from California, interested in a vineyard, wanted to know about it. And, you know, it's not impossible, but it's very difficult to sell them a property like that. And I don't think that's what the legislation was meant for. Yeah. And it's difficult for us when we're trying to market those world-class type properties to international buyers.
Yeah, absolutely. Richard, we appreciate you coming on, and we appreciate you being part of the Private Office Network, as well as the network at Engel & Bulkers. You know, you and I could go back and forth and talk for hours, and I'm sure we will in March at EVX. I'm looking forward to seeing you
there.
Las Vegas, that's our conference, for anybody that doesn't know that, annual conference. It's fantastic. But anyways, Richard Deacon from our shop in Okanagan out in British Columbia. Thanks again for jumping on with us. We appreciate you very much.
Absolute pleasure, Amelia. I hope everyone has a great week out there.
Yeah. And if any of our listeners have any questions, give me a shout. I'm happy to connect you with Richard, or you can go ahead and go check out RichardJamesDeacon.com. Again, RichardJamesDeacon.com. You can learn more about Richard there and his services. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. You bet. Awesome. Great segment today with Richard. We'll be back in a couple minutes here on the Despirito Team Real Estate Show. This segment was powered by Private Office. Stay tuned. All right. Good morning. Today we've got on the line with us Jennifer Jaber of RIblogger.com. Jennifer's here to talk about the top five events happening here in Rhode Island. Jen, all yours.
Thank you. The Newport Winter Festival is 2024 is taking place February 16th to the 25th, which I also believe coincides with most school breaks. There's various locations in Newport. It has been touted as the New England's largest winter extravaganza. The Newport Winter Festival features 10 days of nonstop music, food, and fun. Some main features are the Polar Pineapples, the Chili Cook-Off, Beach Polo, Princess Party, Jimmy Buffett Tribute Band, the Eagles Experience, and much more. And you can get details at NewportWinterFestival.com. I've been in the past, and it's great. So you have to just definitely pick your day and see what you're looking to find. There's also ice sculptures, tons of food, music. It's just kind of 10 days of nonstop fun in Newport. So definitely a good reason to go to Newport.
It's awesome.
If there's wrestling fans out there, Saturday, February 17th is the New England Fan Fest 2024 from 10 to 6 p.m. at Crown Plaza Hotel. Professional wrestlers and New England sports fans, mark your calendars as the premier wrestling fun fest returns. There'll be so much talent and your favorite wrestling superstars. There's meet and greets, there's autograph sessions, photo opportunities, unique and rare merchandise, and so much more. And again, that's Saturday, February 17th.
Nice.
Monday, February 12th to Saturday, February 17th is Puppy Love at the G Pub in Providence. This Puppy Love experience brings you back to relive your first date retro style. G Pub's Puppy Love dining experience includes dinner for two, with apps for two, drive-in faves, some favorite sweet treat desserts, optional drink pairing add-ons, and you can receive a $3 arcade card and a $75 dinner for two, and $35 if you add the cocktail pairing. So if you're looking for something for Valentine's or Galentine's night out, that would be fun. Sunday. Awesome. Oh, sorry.
I just said awesome.
Sunday, February 18th is the Sunday Fun Day Comedy Extravaganza at Hometown Tavern in Warren. Get ready for the ultimate Sunday Fun Day comedy brunch starting at 11 a.m. There'll be delicious bites, lots of laughter, and a great way to kick off your week. Bloody Marys and mimosas will be flowing, obviously, to add to the joyful vibe. So definitely worth checking that out. Again, that's Sunday, February 18th. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, for all the Swifties in the world, Sunday, February 18th from 2 to 4:30 is the Taylor Swift Galentine's Skate at United Skates of America. I'm calling all Swifties to join for a skating to your favorite Taylor Swift song, answer Taylor Swift trivia, and dress in your favorite Taylor Swift era for a chance to win prizes. And friendship bracelet trading is highly encouraged.
Awesome. And you can check it all out at riblogger.com. That's the best website in the state to find out what's happening here in our communities. Always a ton of great events. Thank you so much, Jennifer. And looking forward to talking with you next week.
Thank you. Have a great week.
You're welcome. You too. Thank you. Awesome. Great show today. I'd like to thank Jennifer Jaber of RIblogger.com, Matt Bates of Movement Mortgage, Melissa Delena of Delena Law, Richard Deacon of Engel & Bulkers, Okanagan, Okanagan out of Canada. Thanks for joining us today, Richard. And Ethan, our producer, and you, our listeners, for making this show the most listened to radio show for real estate in the Providence market. Thank you so much. God bless you. We'll see you back here again next week. Take care.